From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM. We'll hear from this morning's Cover Crops and Robots event held on campus, and then we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. Along the way, I'll remind you to get signed up for tomorrow's post Farm Doc Trip to Brazil webinar. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or online at willag.org. And to come out Saturday between 3 and 5 to Riggs Beer to see and hear the University of Illinois wheat breeder, one from Virginia as well, talk about wheat breeding and barley. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at 561.5, 19 and three quarters lower. September at 597, down 9.5. A new crop December, 6.25 lower, settled $4.99. Soybeans, July contract 1337, 27 lower. August down 23.5 at $12.74 and three quarters. In November at $11.87.5 a bushel, down 19.5 cents. Bean meal $1.60 lower. The bean oil off $1.04. Soft red winter wheat down 22 at 625.5 for the July. The hard red July finished at 885.5, down 9.75. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM Total Grain Marketing. Admittedly, Greg, you and I are talking in the 11 o'clock hour. It is the first time that I've had a chance to look at the marketplace today. And as I opened it up to call you, I thought, holy cow, wow. That's bad.
A lot of negative news. Yeah, the Chinese canceled a 10.7 million bushel corn purchase that they had made prior. And that just kind of reiterates the poor demand that we've seen for corn the last several months. And then from the supply side, the crops are getting planted. We're ahead of pace on corn and bean planting progress. Even up in North Dakota, it sounds like they're making some progress this week. So it's too soon to, you know, worry about hot and dry weather later on. That may or may not show up, but it's just too early here in May to talk about. So, you know, we just have poor demand, and we've got good weather so far on the supply side, and that's led to the funds continuing to sell off, and that's why we're at where we're at, I think.
Yeah, to be honest, when you thought about this marketing year, old crop and new crop both, it's not as if we haven't been warned. And we've talked a lot about 2013 and the fall off after the fact there. Different circumstances, but many were watching that as a year that seemed like it was right. I mean, the following year. This one really rolled over at this time. I bet farmers were really concerned, especially those who have old crop yet to sell for corn and soybean.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The new crop, not as big a issue yet at this point, only because we've got crop insurance to protect our downside. The February average is 591, an 85% policy kicks in at 502. So anything below 502, if you don't sell and the market goes lower, you're losing on the market side, but you're gaining on the crop insurance side. So there's protection when it comes to crop insurance. But on old crop, there is no protection via crop insurance. You're on your own. So the guys that still are holding on to old crop corn and beans, for that matter, it's tough. And we're just in that transition phase. You know, we've had two good years of $7 corn and, you know, $15-$16 beans, but now we're transitioning back to probably a more normal 5 and 12 type environment. And we can go a little bit higher, a little bit lower than that on either side, but it just feels like we're kind of, the two good years are probably in the rearview mirror, and now we're going to transition back into more what I would call normal type prices.
Domestic usage still remains strong. This is about the export market for both?
It is, yes. But of course, if the processors know they're the only game in town, if the exporters aren't buying corn, they have a tendency to relax their basis and feel like the grain will come to them. They don't have to chase it via higher bids. So we're starting to see a little bit weaker basis from the domestic processors. The demand is still there, but they feel like without the export market, they can probably buy it a little bit cheaper.
What's the next thing to look forward to?
Probably we got to get till the weather, probably not until late June, mid to late June. That's probably going to be critical up until then, the next 30 days. If it rains, you know, the adage is rain makes grain. And if it doesn't rain, you know, these small crops don't need a lot of rain. They'll just root down. So it's hard to come up with something on the supply side that's going to be supportive for the next 30 days. The one thing I would say is technically the market is oversold. We just need to get something to, you know, cause us to bounce a little bit. For example, Kansas City wheat 2 weeks ago today was trading at $7.40 a bushel. Everything was negative. The funds were short. And 2 weeks later, yesterday, corn hit Kansas City wheat hit $9. That's $1.60 bounce. And even this morning, it was up even more than that. So we've had a 24% run up in wheat prices in Kansas City in just 2 weeks. So that's a reminder that things can change. That we're not. We're not, you know, the crop's not in the bins yet, but today it's hard to find anything friendly today, but that can change in 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks' time.
And because that's part of the coarse grain complex, it does add or lend support to the corn market at some point.
Exactly. Not today, obviously, but, you know, like I say, things can change in a short period of time, and we've sold off so much that, like I say, with oversold conditions, it wouldn't take much to see a little bit of a bounce, but... you know, obviously we're not going to get back everything we've lost. Now we're just hoping to get some kind of a bounce to gain some of it back.
Not today. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Earlier today, I was on the South Farms here on the Urbana-Champaign campus to witness a cover crop event, which was really about last fall. Dennis Bowman is here with University of Illinois Extension in Sala Issa. He joins us from ABE, that's Agricultural and Biological Engineering, to talk about the difference in cover crop seeding last fall, which took place, one with a robot into a standing crop and the other after the crop had been harvested. So really the comparison, and you can find these pictures on our website at willag.org, is about the biomass produced and how well this took place. I think, so I'll start with the ABE part or the robot part of this just a little bit. This is not a very big robot. It's got to get down between the corn rows to make this work. Can you tell me where the idea came from and about the work behind the robot itself, the software, those sorts of things?
The robot idea started with EarthSense and Girish Chaudhry's labs. After they've actually originally designed a robot that can go through the rows to monitor the growth of our corn crops, and they're asking what next. And so out of that synergy came, it's like, hey, let's do cover crops. We can plant cover crops earlier, have them established in the field when you harvest, and then and then they can grow larger. You can actually use that biomass for other things afterwards.
How hard is it to make a robot run down corn rows?
It takes a lot of ingenuity and skills, and, you know, that's something they're always testing. If you stop by ABE, you'll see Girish's lab with the robot walking down the hallways or walking up in the grass up a tree to test all the different skill sets, what's needed for the robot. Because they're trying to make sure that this robot is autonomous, it can operate through the rows, it can sense the rows without human intervention at all.
Now this robot is about 15 to 18 inches wide, maybe 2 feet by 2 feet the other directions. It does have a small bin on it.
It will hold about 100 pounds of seed.
It'll hold actually that much seed. Yeah. It's not a small bin in that case, is it? In that case, Dennis Bowman.
The motor and the platform part is pretty small. It's mostly hopper and spinner and batteries.
So, Dennis, when you set this up, and I am assuming that you helped to set part of this up, the hope was to show what this spring from it.
So there's a lot of good reasons to do cover crops. And some of those are related to improving soil health. Some of those are related to tying up nutrients in the soil by using the fall biomass to absorb those nutrients and lock them up biologically in the soil so they're not lost over the winter. And so when we're going with a late seeded cover crop after harvest, we don't get as much opportunity for growth, root development, and plant development. But when we can get that plant out there earlier, we can get more biomass. We can do a better job of tying up those nutrients. And if we're in a livestock situation, then we get more biomass for potential winter grazing as well.
So this is really about getting in early, and you can do that with something small. Why can't you just fly on instead? I mean, what are the differences that are here that farmers might take into account as they think about the farm of the future?
Our goal is to be as cheap or cheaper than the cost of flying it on. The other thing is you lose some efficiency with flying it on because corn's a very good seed catcher. A lot of stuff doesn't reach the ground. So being down underneath the canopy gives us that opportunity to get it down and get most of our seed right on the soil.
How do you envision one of these working? And maybe, Sala, you can talk about this too. In the future, do they work as swarms? How are they filled? How much seed really needs to take place? There seems like there might be a lot of work with something that is so very small.
So one of the goals for the research this year is to do the swarming. Right this past season and so far with this robot, it's been mostly an operator that's been monitoring the robot as it runs through the field with an individual operator that's remote and staying off to the side and letting the robot do its thing. Now we're wanting to move to the next level where one operator will be controlling a swarm of these robots and letting them do their thing through the field. When they come out, come back, and the hoppers load, then we can refill the hopper, swap out batteries if needed. In the future, we'll probably try to have some type of robotic tender as well that will do a lot of those features automatically. That's a little bit farther down the road and for the project.
That sounds infinitely harder to do than watching one small robot go down the corn rows.
That's true, but that's in general where we're moving towards autonomy. There's other companies as well, for example, with spraying. They have one operator that is now in charge of 8 sprayers at once, where they spray orchards. You see that all in California and so on. I think Dennis laid it all out. That's really the goal. The goal is to reach a level for autonomy where these are just self-operating. They can go back to the station, get filled, do what needs to do, and then they go into the fields being operated by a single operator and just managing it all.
You think a lot about the safety of these issues as well, because these are operating autonomously. The difference between one and many, is that harder in the way of safety as it's related to the farm?
That's a great question. In a sense, it has multiple aspects to it. From one perspective, you're actually reducing the number of operators. So you're reducing the exposure to hazards on a farm in general. So from that perspective, it is safer. But now you have more machinery operating autonomously. So there's a bigger question if can something go wrong? Can an operator actually visually and follow up with multiple machinery at the same time? These are still, I would say, unresolved questions. We're still trying to figure out how do you go about and test the safety of these machinery. And that's in a sense, some part of my research work here at U of I.
And finally, Dennis Bowman, this is part of a larger picture Farm of the Future program here on campus. Can you tell me concisely what that is, what it means, and how people might be able to find out more about it?
So we've got a lot of research going on at the U of I related to technology and agriculture coming out of the Center for Digital Agriculture. And one of those projects is this Farm of the Future, which is a test bed for some of these other pieces of technology that are coming out of a variety of research programs. And so we've got 80 to possibly 120 acres here on this site that we can use. We've got 40 that's going to be managed as a modern conventional farm, and the other 40 to 80 as we expand over to the west is going to be managed using these new technologies. So we've got lots of sensors, we've got aerial monitoring, we've got drone monitoring, and we've got the cover crops and the robotics. We'll also have some livestock out here grazing next winter as well. So we're integrating some livestock into the system as well.
We've been talking, of course, with Dennis Bowman and Sala Issa, both from the University of Illinois U of I Extension. We're working through cover crops and seeding in the fall and efficiency and robotics today. You can learn more about that on our website at willag.org, or at least see the photos and some video of what happened earlier today.
Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. We got a beautiful day over here in the Kansas City area. Sunny and perfectly ranged temperatures and low humidity. It's a really nice day here.
Yeah, it's not too bad here either. And apparently it's been pretty good across the Midwest. At least that's what the folks at the CME Group in Chicago think, because the market has dumped.
Absolutely.
So are there any problems in the Corn Belt at the moment?
You said it. No. You know, we've managed to move along fairly well. We've had a little pockets here, you know, with the upper Midwest. There's been a lot of chatter about that up there, and they are still behind, you know, in Minnesota and parts of North Dakota. And there's a few spots in Michigan and Ohio, you know, that aren't doing all that well with their progress. But when you step back and you look at the moisture profile, it's pretty darn good. We have very few areas with excessive moisture right now, and the forecast is for near to below normal precipitation as we move forward through the next 10 days to maybe 2 weeks. And if that ends up being completely correct, then I think we're going to see enough of a mix of showers and sunny days, and temperatures will eventually get into the 80s next week. The bottom line is going to be, we're going to be out in those fields and we're going to get it done here in another couple of weeks, no less than or no more than probably. And we'll be in a really good position. These crops are also the ones that have already been planted. They've got ideal moisture in the soil. All we need is another few days of really warm weather like we had not too long ago, and we'll be seeing those crops jumping out of the soil and just taking off.
Yeah, no, I was talking to a farmer that is about 30 miles south of Lake Wobegon. Yes, yes. For those of you who recognize that, there is actually one between St. Cloud, Minnesota, and Fargo, North Dakota, and they had moved along quickly. And he seemed to feel really good about the crop there. To the north and to the west, you and I talked last week, I think, about issues in the Canadian prairies. Have they abated at all?
That hasn't. They actually went through a little period, and I think it was probably when we were talking last week, I think we made mention that there was some rain that had been occurring, and Alberta has some short-term benefits, not so much in Saskatchewan, but since we talked last week, the rain stopped and the temperatures got into the 80s. I think yesterday it was the lower 90s in parts of Alberta and western Saskatchewan. Well, you probably can guess that topsoil moisture has been zapped dry once again. And so they're very short on their topsoil and subsoil moisture in some of that drought-stricken area in the west. This includes western Saskatchewan and east central and southern portions of Alberta. And there's quite a few other areas that are running a little dry, but not critically dry. The best moisture in Canada is in Manitoba and eastern Saskatchewan. The crops there are doing real well. In fact, they're getting even better. It was a little wet and a little cool for a while this spring, but that's turning around. But Canada is still a concern, and it may be yet at least another couple of weeks before we can start improving the rainfall potential there. And we'll keep our fingers crossed for those folks up there. But that's one area in North America that's still going to have a struggle for a while.
In Kansas and Oklahoma, the crop tour is underway. What kind of conditions will they be working under, and have things improved there at all?
Oh, we've seen a lot of improvement in hard red winter wheat country moisture-wise over this past week or week and a half. A big part of the area that had been critically dry has had enough rain that there's been a nice improvement. Now, you mentioned specifically Kansas. Kansas, of course, has not been included in some of that, especially not the southwest and south central parts of the state. We're still critically low on moisture there, but there has been improvement in areas to the north, to the west, and to the south. And we're going to see more rain occurring as we go forward, really beginning tonight and tomorrow into Friday. There will be rain and thunderstorms in that drier pocketed area. We'll probably get an inch of moisture to help ease some of that dryness that remains. And don't get me wrong, we're still dry down deeper in the ground. And this moisture is coming rather late. The word is out there that there's really not been a tremendous amount of change in Kansas crop conditions. And obviously Kansas has been left out of it, so there's still a fair amount of crop country there that's hurting. But we have seen improvement in Nebraska, in northeast Colorado, northwestern Kansas, most assuredly. Even the Texas Panhandle has seen some improvement, and portions of Oklahoma have had timely rain. They still have some moisture deficits to deal with, but it's all moving in the right direction. And over this next 7 to 10 day period, there's going to be a near daily potential for showers from West Texas all the way up into parts of Nebraska. So not necessarily going to rain heavily every day or widespread, but there's going to be showers around so that everybody will get a little moisture eventually, and the temperatures will certainly not be hot for a while.
Is there anything of note out of South America, Brazil or Argentina?
The exciting news for the Argentina farmer is that rain is on the horizon. Three waves of it will likely occur over the next 10 days. And eventually, every part of the wheat production area in Argentina will get a drink of water, and probably sufficient enough to start their planting season, which normally begins in late May. And June is the month. That's when they usually get most of their planting done. And if all this rain verifies, they are going to be looking at a much better potential for getting the crop in the ground. Now, they're going to need a lot more rain down the road, and hopefully they won't get into too much of a wet weather bias too soon. If they can get that crop planted before it gets too wet, then that'll be really good for them. In Brazil, it's status quo. I think last week we made mention that it was still drying in safrinha corn and cotton country there, and that's still going to be the case as we move forward through the next 10 days. The thing that a lot of people are watching right now is the risk of frost and freezes, because there's so much late planted safrinha crop, and corn in particular, in Paraná and parts of São Paulo, as well as Mato Grosso do Sul, that even though the moisture profile is good for supporting that crop, if it gets too cold before that crop is finished, then you know what will happen. The crop will be damaged and could end up losing production potential. So the marketplace is focusing in on temperatures more than rainfall right now, and there is no threat of any seriously cold weather in the next 2 weeks.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Just a quick reminder before we go. Tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., join the webinar with the Farm Dog team to take a look back at their Brazil trip. You can do that online. It's free at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu to register, or at willag.org. And on Saturday between 3 and 5, the wheat breeder from the University of Illinois will be at Riggs Beer for an informal event. Virginia breeder will be there too. They'll talk about both wheat and barley. That's 3 to 5 Saturday at Riggs Beer in Urbana.